Right now, we're in our series called Weeds in Our Garden. The idea is that all of us have weeds in our garden. And if we're being honest, a lot of us are not being honest about the mental health, emotional health issues that we're facing right now. And we give each other roses, just hoping you don't see the weeds in our garden. And if there's any area where I really struggle a lot is this topic today, and it's worry, anxiety. How many of you out there, raise your hand, struggle with worry? Raise your hand if you struggle with worry. Okay, many of us do. And I come from a chronic, long line of worriers. My grandfather was a pastor, and every single Saturday night, he would be physically sick, almost to a place where he couldn't function because he knew he was preaching the next day. He was worried, anxiety about preaching the next day. And I think about all the things I've worried about in my life growing up. I think about as a kid in elementary school, I worried about homework. I worried about getting into trouble. I worried about sports. I worried about girls. I worried about my hair even in elementary school. I worried about a guy named Bart Hudson. Bart Hudson was a big bully in our neighborhood and in our school. When he was 10 years old, his voice had already changed and he was growing facial hair, okay? And so I worried about him. Bart Hudson scared me to death. In fact, Bart Hudson's actually not his real name. I've changed it to protect myself in case he's here or he's watching online right now. So, and then I went from elementary school, went to middle school, and I worried about girls, I worried about athletics, I worried about my grades and getting in trouble, then went into, you know, high school and continued to worry about those things, and Bart Hudson, who, by the way, at that time had a full-grown beard and 3 children in high school. And then, you know, you're going to college, you worry about what my major's going to be. I know one thing, it was definitely not going to be ministry. I wasn't going to do that. And obviously God had a sense of humor. And then I got married and I started having adult worries, right? You start having kids. I worried about my daughter. And back when we had our first born, it was at that time when people started hearing about babies being switched in the hospital. So I was worried about that. So I was making sure the person that came out of my wife was the person we left the hospital with. So I followed her like drafting like a NASCAR. Wherever she went, I went. I had eyeballs on her all the time. I put a little cross at the bottom of her left foot, a little red cross, so I knew it was the same baby. In fact, that cross is still there this very day, 22 years later. And then I'll never forget, you know, leaving the hospital and worried about, you know, all the cars and anybody going to run into us on the way that short distance from the hospital to our house in Tucson, Arizona. Now, all these worries. And now, 22 years later, I worry about some things for her. I worry about my other kids. God has something to say to us because I know I'm not the only one with this problem. So if you have your Bibles, open up to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew's the very first gospel in the New Testament. Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is going to talk to our hearts this morning about something in the middle of his sermon called the Sermon on the Mount. And he's talking to people on the hillside. And I want you to hear what he says right in the middle of that sermon, starting in verse 25 in chapter 6 in Matthew. Therefore, I tell you, do not what? Say it with me, do not what? Do not worry. About your life, what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. Is not life more important than food, the body more important than clothes? I mean, look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns. And yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow? They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon, and all of his splendor, was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you? Oh, you of little faith. So do not what? Worry. Saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans, they run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. He knows. I want to give you 3 pieces of advice on overcoming the storm. When facing, how do I find calm in the middle of all the mist of worry? Number one is this, and that is, don't let worry overcome you. That's what Jesus is telling us today. Don't let worry overcome you. Don't let it overtake you. Another way of saying is, don't be obsessed about it. I mean, a lot of times we obsess, right? And I want you to remember the people that Jesus is speaking to on the hillside. They're an oppressed people. On top of that, they're under the rule of the Roman Empire. okay? They're not free. They don't live like we do. They're oppressed people. Many of them are slaves, forced to walk, forced to carry things when they don't want to. They were very restricted lives and what they wanted to do. They worked very, very, very hard and made very, very, very little. They lived in a time where people did not live long. I mean, you were blessed if you lived in your 30s and into your 40s. All right, they didn't live very long. Remember, this is the people who hear Jesus when he says, I tell you the truth, do not worry. I'm guessing that was probably pretty hard for them to hear. So over the last 2,000 years, living conditions have gotten much better. We are better educated, better resourced. We have better health, better hygiene. We have way more freedom, 100 times more freedom than the people who originally heard Jesus' message. Isn't it great that you and I don't have anything to worry about, that we live in an anxiety-free society? Isn't it great? You laugh because it's laughable, right? I mean, people doing studies right now in generations say this generation right here, right now, worry more than any generation in human history. We worry about cars, we worry about our homes, we worry about our jobs, we worry about hair or lack thereof, we worry about children, retirement, we worry about our image and what people think about us and our favorite football team, will I get cancer if I use a microwave and I talk on the cell phone at the same time. Jesus tries to reach out to our heart by telling us something that's really simple. He's like, look at the birds. Look how God takes care of them. Look at the lilies in the field. And while he's talking, there are birds around. And there are lilies right there on the side of that mountain. Speaking of birds, I remember my family, we took care of a bird one time. We bought a parakeet named BJ. And my parents wanted to teach the bird how to speak. And so they had a tape recorder. They recorded themselves saying like these phrases. And I'd walk through my house hearing my mom talk again. You use the same word like, hello, hello, hello. I'm like, what's wrong with my mom? I'd go by. There's a tape recorder of her voice right there by the bird cage, just hoping that the bird would pick up on the English language, right? Well, the bird never learned a single word of anything they taught. And finally, all it did was squawk. It got to a point where I came home from school. I noticed something really weird about our house. It was quiet. And I walk in. I see there's no bird. I ask my mom, Mom, what happened to BJ? She says, well, your dad was home today. He was on an important call. And he picked up the phone. And as he's talking, the bird is squawking. And like I said, the bird didn't understand English. My dad's telling it, shut it. But she didn't listen. He said, shut it again. She didn't listen. And finally, he put the phone on hold. I remind you, this is back in the day when you had cords, okay? So wherever you picked up a phone, you stayed in that room, okay? You can't just leave. You got a cord. As far as the cords you go, that's as far as you're going to go. And so he couldn't go far enough. He put the phone on hold. He went over to the bird cage, opened it up, grabbed the parakeet, went out the front door, and threw the bird out the front door. That's what happens when Freemans take care of birds. Aren't you glad that God does a better job? So if you're ever in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and you see a flock of parakeets, you know where it came from, okay? So here's my lesson. That is, Jesus says, look at the birds. God can take care of them. Look at the lilies in the field. Obviously, he can handle whatever you have going on. If God can take care of the birds of the air and the flowers of the field, which are here today and gone tomorrow, he will surely take care of you. I believe Jesus is saying that we don't have to worry because we have an all-loving God who is all-powerful and he's in control and he's got you. And often I found that when I worry, listen, it's all in vain. I mean, how many times have you worried about something for nothing? How many hours have you wasted in your life analyzing a situation over and over and over and over again in your head, fearful of how it's going to turn out, right? I mean, think about it. I mean, often those greatest fears never come to fruition. Sometimes the greatest mistake we make is we're fearing we're going to make a mistake, so we're just stuck. And I can't tell you how many times I've had, like, you know, imaginary conversations with people, you know, about something, because I know they're going to say this, so when they say this, I want to say that, and I have all these conversations, and they never happen. They never materialize. Therefore, we're stuck in the state where we don't do anything except waste God-given moments doing about something that never happens. And we become paralyzed, not benefiting the kingdom of God because we're stuck in this ruminating cycle of anxiety and worry. Don't be overcome by worry because it can really affect who you are. It can really steal your joy. We're going to take the next step in overcoming the storm, finding calm in the midst of worry. Here it is. Make trusting God a priority over worry. Make trusting God. A lot of times we make the worry a bigger priority than trusting God. Here's the thing. Worrying is the opposite of trusting God. I believe the key reason why worry is so effective in draining us and sapping us of mental and emotional health because when we find ourselves in a vortex of worry, we're being engaged in a practice that actually disconnects us from God, right? And you're not close to God when you're worried. You get disconnected from him. When I was a student pastor, they said that the generation I was working with in student ministry was the most connected generation. And the reason why is because they had Facebook, they had Twitter, and they had texting. And I didn't see that because I saw a group of people who are oftentimes disconnected from reality. I would take a group of teenagers, 50 of them, in a big old bus with big old windows. We're going on a mission trip. We go to retreat. We see these beautiful vistas and valleys in the mountains. And I'd say, look at that. And they're, I turn around, they're all looking on their cell phones, right? I was like, I don't think this is very connected. I don't know if you've ever said this, parents, but I would encourage you, read your kids' phones, read their texts. If you ever read your kids' texts, I'd encourage you to do that. Unless your kids are paying for it, it's your phone, okay? And another trick of the trade is when they're showered, that's when I take my kids' cell phones and we sit there and look through it and make sure, hey, that's my phone, okay? You want your own phone? You pay for it. But the bottom line is I saw a kid's text when I was a student pastor, and I want to share with you this conversation because I want you to see how riveting it is, okay? Look at this conversation with two teenage boys. Teen boy, what's up? Reply, nothing. What's up with you? Teen boy, nothing. What are you doing tonight? Reply, nothing. What are you doing tonight? Teen boy, nothing. Hey, thanks. Good talk. Reply, you too. Unbelievable the depth they go, right? It's like some kind of code I can't figure out. And they call this the most connected generation. And I just say that because what happens with worry is we get disconnected from God. I mean, the energy that we spend worrying, listen, could be so much better put to use if we would actually pray about it. I mean, what is that thing you're worried about right now? My question is, when's the last time you prayed about it? If you're like me, sometimes I'll go days, sometimes weeks, not even praying about the thing that I'm ruminating and causing so much anxiety in my life. I would say this, here's a little formula to remember. I don't have it on the screen. It's not your bulletin, but you can write it down. Worry replaced by prayer equals trust. Worry replaced by prayer equals trust. Think about that. It's amazing when you pray. It's like supernaturally you can feel your blood pressure going down. And I want to encourage you once again, worry replaced by prayer equals trust. There's a lady in our church. Her name is Sheila Clark, and she says something in life group that I'll never forget. She says, you know what? I have found it impossible in my life, she said. I have found it impossible to worry and worship at the same time. Like when I'm worshiping, I'm not worried about anything. But all of a sudden, when I'm just stuck in worry, you know, I have a hard time worshiping. But if I can get myself where I can worship, I can't worry. It's like trying to sneeze with your eyes open, okay? You can't do it. Your eyeballs will fly out of your face, okay? You cannot worry and worship at the same time. And I would encourage you to remember that. I think it's interesting what Oswald Chambers said about worry. He states, it's not only wrong to worry, but it's also an infidelity, he says. Because worry means that we do not think God can look after the practical details of our lives. Wow. Have you ever noticed what Jesus said would choke the word out from inside of us? Did he say it was Satan? No, look what he said in Mark chapter 4. Look what he said. But the what? The worries of this life. Say that with me again. But the what? The worries of this life. The deceitfulness of wealth and desires for other things come in and do what? They choke out the word. So worries of this life, they choke the word, making it unfruitful. It's the little worries, isn't it? We say to ourselves, I will not trust what I cannot see. In essence, Jesus is saying, you trust me first. I promise you, if you trust me, everything's going to work out. One of my favorite verses in Lamentations is chapter 3 when it says, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are, say it with me, church, they are what? They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. His mercies are new every morning. And I love the fact that I woke up this morning, guess what? I had a clean slate. Had a clean slate to start off the day. And then Jesus ends this discourse on the Sermon on the Mount by saying, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's got enough troubles of its own. Each day has enough trouble. In other words, today there'll be trouble. And tomorrow, guess what? There'll be trouble. What God is saying is, I just want you to trust me right here, right now, whatever you got going on in this moment. I'll give you a head start. He says, I'll give you new mercies. I want you to trust me. I want you to put trusting me a greater priority over worry. Will you do that? Will you put trusting God a greater priority over worrying? That's all God's asking for. Jesus never promised that we'd have a problem-free life. Jesus had tons of problems in his life. In fact, he said, if the world hates you, keep in mind, it hated me first. He says, in this world, you'll have troubles, but don't worry, he says, because I have overcome the world. What Jesus is really saying to these people is, do not worry, because nothing that really matters in this life is ultimately at risk. Nothing that really matters. He's thinking of eternity. And let's be honest right now, that's very hard for you and I to buy into at times. Now, we're at the final stage. I want to switch directions and tie all this up at the end. I believe we're going to overcome the storm, finding calm in the midst of worry. Above all else, here it is. Always build your life on the right foundation. Always build your life on the right foundation. I think it's more important than any medication, any massage, any relaxation technique out there. More than anything else, I believe that building your life on the right foundation is the key. And we're going to look at the end of Jesus' message, see how he kind of wraps up this time with these people on the hillside. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and go to Matthew 7. Just flip the page over to Matthew 7. And I want you to tell you a little something about people who speak for a living, kind of a trick of the trade. And that is, a lot of times we put more energy into the introduction than we do the conclusion of a message that we're giving. We speakers want those first few moments to be strong because we want to kind of wrap you in. So you think we have some credibility to deliver a message worth listening to. You ever heard a preacher, you know, start and do well, but he does not know how to end, you know, land the plane? You know what I'm saying? He doesn't know how to end the message. And some of you are going, yeah, every single week here at RCC, we experience that. But they work so hard in the beginning, but they don't work very hard on the conclusion of their message. Well, at the beginning of the message, Jesus just starts throwing out compliments all over the place. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Just compliments all over the place. Let's see how he closes out his sermon. Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, Jesus says, and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall. Because its foundation was on the what? On the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, and yet it did what? It fell with a great crash. End of sermon. Jesus lands the plane, walks off the stage. That's it. I don't know about you. Seems like kind of a downer way to end a sermon. Seems like he could have been a little more positive there at the end. Why did he do that? I tell you why. He knows the natural inclination of your heart and my heart. He's going to end the lesson with a little word picture of our life, of your life and of my life. And he uses a story that you and I can relate to. Now, modern readers have kind of used the same story. I'm going to kind of test your knowledge of American literature right now. All the characters are builders. Each builds and constructs a house. There's a contrast between wise and foolish building. Every house faces a test. If the house is built wisely, it stands. If it's built foolishly, it falls. Anybody recognize the story? One day, a big bad wolf comes and says, little pig, let me in. And the little pig says what? Not by the what? The hair of my chinny chin chin. You guys are very spiritual people here. Spiritual at RCC. Anyway, two of the pigs, they build their house out of junk, probably because it's easier and cheaper. They never stop and ask the question, will this stand the test of the wolf? One little pig builds his house wisely, and at last, there's something about house building that reaches home to every single one of us. And Jesus tells a similar story about house building. And in the detail each story, each person is building a house. And to understand the meaning of the story, place the word house and replace it with character. Replace the word house with soul or with life. What he's saying is you and I are building a life. The materials that we use to construct our life, they come from the choices that we make. We tend to get distracted by this little fact because of all the circumstances that are coming our way. And we have all this anxiety, all this worry, all this bombardment, mental, emotional health. And then we think our choices don't really matter. Like they're so small and they're so insignificant. And the issue is our soul matters though. Because we're dealing with a soul, you're dealing with eternity. We're constructing this building, the soul, for eternity. And you make choices all the time. Good, bad, wise, foolish, deliberate, casual choices all the time. The problem is we have made some foolish choices, haven't we? Think about this. I want to ask a question to see if anybody can relate to this. Raise your hand if you've ever made a commitment you realize later you should not have made. Raise your hand if you ever made a commitment you realize later you should not have made. It's a bad choice. All right, raise your hand. This right here. Raise your hand if you've ever said something you later regret it. Raise your hand if you ever said something you later regret it. If you've been married longer than 5 minutes, your hand better be up. Because you need to go to counseling for denial, all right, and lying. All right. How about this right here? Have you ever dated someone who is not like, the model for spiritual health? Raise your hand if you ever dated someone who was not the model of spiritual health. Okay, that's my hand's up. Now, raise your hand if you've ever fallen asleep in church. Raise your hand if you've ever fallen asleep in church. All right, you people definitely need to come forward. Probably a good choice. I don't know. Anyway, you and I make foolish choices. We're constructing this house. And sometimes our choices make for unstable foundation. And God says, I'm very interested in the house you're building. The type of house you're building has a lot to do, listen, with how much anxiety you've got going on in your life. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 says there is going to come a time of, look at this, testing at Christ's judgment day to see what kind of material, talking about us, each builder has used. Everyone's work will be put through the fire so that all can see whether or not it kept its value. What was accomplished, what was really accomplished with your life. And then every workman who was built on the foundation with the right materials and whose work still stands will get his pay. We understand that we're all constructing houses, but the second part may be harder for you to swallow, and here it is. Each house faces a storm. As you read through Matthew chapter 7, you understand there are two storms, and here's the reality, is one comes on the house that's built on the rock, and the other comes on the house that's built on the sand. The one built on the rock stands, the one that's built on the sand, it falls. Every one of us is going to go through a storm. But the reality is there's somebody in this room, there's somebody right now online, because of where we live, they're thinking this. They're thinking, you know what, Nathan, I'm rich enough, I'm shrewd enough, I'm smart enough, I've got enough resources, I'm successful enough to engineer a storm-free life. And I just want you to hear me, no, you can't. It's impossible. There are going to be storms in your life. It may be vocational. It may be because you're struggling right now with infertility. It may be a grief storm. When someone close to you, like it's done with me several times, someone close to you all of a sudden dies. And yet there's some will say this, I'm bright enough, I'm clever enough that I can work through this by myself. No, you can't. No, you can't. Jesus didn't say the builder was evil. He just said he was foolish. And I know if you went to the person, you go, you know, you have only one life. And you chose to build it on something so shaky. Like, why would you do that? They'd probably say something like, I don't know, it just seemed like a good idea at the time. I don't think a person walks in a bar and says, you know what? I want to become an alcoholic today. That's what I want to do. I want to just mess up my life and mess up my family. I don't think a young man starts down a career path and says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be so wrapped up in my career. I'm going to be so busy. I never see my wife. I never see my kids. So that they'll carry this huge hole in their heart for as long as they live. That sounds like a great idea.